We're holding on Chafbeis Amud Beis, the middle of the Amud, the line begins Gufa. We said in the Gemara Gufa, getting back to something that we learned yesterday, we told about how Rav Iklal Bavel B'Tainis Tzibur, Rav one time visited the city of Bavel on a Tainis Tzibur. He said, come Kara B'Sifra. He got up to read from the Torah. He was given an Aliyah. Pasach Baruch. He started by making a bracha. Chosem B'Loi Baruch. Good morning, Yaakov. Then he finished the Kriya. He finished his Aliyah and did not make a bracha. And we discussed yesterday, what did that mean? Did it mean that he was the third Ola and there was yet to be a fourth Ola after him? Or we said, no, it could just as well mean that he got the Aliyah of Koyan, even though he wasn't a Koyan, but they honored him with it as a distinguished Talmid Chacham. And then he didn't make a bracha after, in keeping with the idea that we said in the Mishnah, that only in earlier times, only the first Ola made the first bracha and the last Ola made the last bracha. Anyway, so we analyzed all that point yesterday. Now let's focus on the second part of the story. We said, Nafal Kula Alma Anpayu, everybody else did Nafilas Apayim after Shmoneh Esrei, V'Rav Loi Nafal Al Anpe, and Rav did not. Now, my time, Rav Loi Nafal Al Anpe. Why didn't Rav do Nafilas Apayim? So the reason is, Ritzpa Shalavonim, so the reason is because there was a stone floor over there. V'Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk at the end of Parashas Bahar says, the Evan Maskis loisitnu ba'artzachem lishtachveis alaha, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to have an Evan Maskis, literally Evan Maskis means a stone pavement. So it used to be the Goyish and Minhag in those days was that they would have in particular stone pavements in front of their getchkas to bow down to. So therefore, so the Pasuk is saying you're not allowed to have that. And when it says Aleha, Aleha, Yata Mishtachva, you're not allowed to bow down on such a pavement out anywhere else in the world. So Aleha, Yata Mishtachva, Ba'artzachem, so you're not allowed to bow down on that kind of pavement in your land, meaning not just in Eretz Yisrael, but anywhere else in the world. But you are allowed to bow down on the stone pavement of the Beis Hamikdash. Now, of course, this is in Bavel, in the city of Bavel. Therefore, since there was a stone pavement over there, then Rav couldn't bow down. And the Gemara points out, could Ula, in which case what we're saying follows what Ula explains. Dama Ula, loy osra Torah, elo ritzpa shalavonim milvad. Ula said, just that. Torah is only asking a stone pavement, but a floor of any other kind of material, you would be allowed to bow on. So since there was a stone floor over here, then Rav couldn't bow down. Well, then the question becomes, Yehochi, my area, Rav. Well, then everybody else has that same issue as well. So why is Rav the only one not bowing down? After the Kulu Nami, then everybody else should be subject to the same Easter, and in fact, just the opposite. If they are bowing down and there's a stone pavement, and there's a stone floor over there, then Rav should be telling them, not just, I'm not going to do it myself as if it was like a personal chumrah or something. He should be telling all of them that you can't do that. Maybe they don't know the Din of Evan Maskis, but then he should tell them. The answer is, Kamei de Rav Havi. The answer is that the stone pavement was only in the part of the shul where Rav was standing. So the Pashtos, he was standing someplace near the front in the Chosh of a place by the Mizrach Vant. So they had stone over there. So in his part of the shul, there was stone, therefore he couldn't bow down. But the rest of the shul had a dirt floor or wood or who knows what, and therefore there was no problem. Well, then the question is, well, then why doesn't Rav just go over to where the rest of the tzibur is and do the nefilas apayim over there? Why is he foregoing the nefilas apayim altogether? And the answer is, you can say, he didn't want to be matriach them. If he comes closer to them, they're going to have to stand up out of cupboard for him. So he didn't want to bother. So instead, he was just going to forego the nefilas apayim that time. That's one answer. The iboyseima. Another possible answer, you could say, Rav Pishit Yadayim V'Raglayim Hava Ovid. Because when Rav bowed down from the Nefilas Apayim, it wasn't just like we think of bowing, like for example, when we do the Nefilas Apayim, we don't even actually bow down at all. We just put our head on our hand for reasons that we're going to talk about in a minute. But even that, I mean, you have, for example, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we do Kodim, where we get down on our hands and knees, but that even that is not Pishit Yadayim V'Raglayim. Pishut yadayim raglayim would actually mean spreading yourself completely flat on the floor. So Rav, when he would do nefilas hapayim, he would actually do that. He would actually bow or and be flat on the floor. And the chid ula, which in that he was going like another statement of ula. Da'ama ula like osra tara ela pishut yadayim raglayim bavad. That's what the Torah is asking you to do on an Evan Maskus, on a stone pavement. So therefore, Rav's usual way of doing the Nefilas HaPayim doesn't work. So let's say, for example, if we are talking about there was a stone floor in the whole shul. We don't have to say now that there was only a stone floor by the Mizrach Vant. We could say the entire shul had a stone floor, but everybody else doesn't do Pishut Yadayim Raglayim, and Rav does. Well, then, the question is, in that case, then why didn't Rav just do a different form of bowing down than he does the rest of the time? Let him not do Pishut Yadayim Raglayim, and then there won't be a problem. And the answer is, he didn't want to change from his usual minhag. His usual minhag is to do Nefilas HaPayim a certain way. He wanted to keep to that minhag. So if that means now there's a stone floor, and therefore he can't do it, okay, so he can't do it. So he won't do Nefilas HaPayim that day. Tosfos points out there's a big difference between the first reason and the second reason. According to the first answer of the Gemara, we're saying that according to the first answer of the Gemara, it may well be that even if we say Daraisa, there's no problem unless you're doing Pishut Yadayim Raglayim, but Dirabbanan, there would be a problem even without that. Just bowing down on a stone floor, according to that first answer, would be also Dirabbanan. Therefore, the Gemara couldn't have answered that it means that he's only doing that only Pishut Yadayim Raglayim is a problem, because according to that first answer, that we're doing any other form, just bowing down like we do by Kodim, for example, would also be a problem on a stone floor. Therefore, in that first answer, instead, the Gemara had to say that there was a stone pavement only in front of Rav, and he just didn't want to have to bother the Tzibur. So we'll talk about at the end, once we get through the discussion over here, we'll talk about what the halacha is nowadays. Anyway, so the boisem, a third possibility, the Gemara says, Adam Chosh of Shiny. There's a difference, an important person, the reason why he didn't do Nefilas HaPayim, nothing to do with the problem of bowing on a stone floor, but because to bow himself on the ground like that, to ask Hashem to accept his tefillah, for an Adam Choshev, for a different person, is different. Kid Rabbi Elazar, as Rabbi Elazar says, the Amar Rabbi Elazar, we learned this in the Sefer Tainus as well, Ein Adam Choshev Rashoi Lipel Aponav, an important person is not allowed to do Nefilas HaPayim, prostrating himself on the ground like that. Elim Kein Nenek Yeshua Bin Nun, unless he's going to be answered, unless he's so certain of his chosim that he's going to be answered like the way Yeshua Bin Nun was. As the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua kum lach." You have after the first battle against the city of Ai, where the Jewish people were defeated and 36 of them were killed. So Yeshua fell on his face in front of the Aron, and he's pleading with Hashem, "What's going on? You brought us into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to end up getting destroyed." And dichtiv. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua kum lach." Hashem says to Yeshua, "Get up! Why are you falling on your face?" So, in other words, the implication is that Hashem is saying to him, "Don't be falling on your face. You're not. So don't be so certain of your schosim to fall on your face that you're going to be that your tefillah is going to be accepted." Now, that's how Rashi learns over here. Rashi and Tainus says differently, that just the opposite. It means that means that Yeshua was in fact answered when he fell on his face. Hashem told him, get up, and okay, I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is Chota Yisrael, and therefore go take care of the fact that somebody took from the spoils of Yericho. Again, as we talked about yesterday, Rashi Antinus is not necessarily actually from Rashi, which would explain why he seems to be contradicting himself. But be that as it may, we see from that story that it's so a regular person, if he, what's the reason anyway? What are the reasons why an Adam Choshev should not fall on his face? So the same Rashi or printed as Rashi and Tainus says that the reason is that Tzibur is going to think less of him. They're going to see that he's not being answered, And then he's an Adam Choshev. He's falling on his face in front of Hashem. And Hashem is not answering him. They're going to be mevazah him. They're going to think that he's not really as great as he's claiming to be. The Ritva there says a different reason, because other the people are going to feel really bad themselves. They're going to say, this is an Adam Gadol we're talking about over here. And he's davening on our behalf. Why is Hashem not answering him? It must be that Hashem is really upset with us. And that's going to make them feel really bad. Whatever the case, then. So for not choshev, big deal. Okay, so he falls on his face. Hashem doesn't answer him. People are going to say, okay, he's not an Adam choshev anyway. He's not necessarily such a great person. He's a poshut yid. So okay, Hashem didn't answer his tefillah. Fine, you know, he needs to have a certain amount of schus for Hashem to pay attention to the fact that he fell on his face. But an Adam choshev, you're going to have one of these two considerations. So therefore, so we can answer that the fact that Rav didn't do nefilas apayim that time in that shul in Bavel, nothing to do at all with there being a stone floor, with the problem of Evan Maskis. The problem is that Rav is an Adam Choshu, and therefore he's not falling on his face. Which, by the way, leaving aside for the moment the matter of Evan Maskis, that is why eventually the minhag developed that by Nefilas HaPayim, you don't fall to the floor. You instead sit down and lean your head on your hand, is because of that. Because eventually, who's going to be able to say on themselves that they're nene b'tfilosik Yeshua ben Nun. So therefore, the minhag developed to stop that nobody does actual prostrating on the ground anymore by the Nefilas HaPayim, and instead they just did the sitting with the head on the hand. In which case, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch it says technically you could do it standing with your head on your arm, but al pi kabbalah you're supposed to actually sit. Anyway, so let's talk about, the Gemara is going to talk about the different kinds of bowing, and then we're going to finish off this discussion about what the proper way is to bow. So the Torah Rabbanan, Kida Alapayim. When we say in the Torah, we learned this in Tainus as well, when it says in the Pasuk that somebody did Kida, Vayikod, Vatikod, whatever, then it means alapayim. It means that only their face is touching the ground. So in other words, like they bend double, they bend at the waist and bend all, until their face is touching the ground. Shenema v'atikud v'sheva apayim oret. As in fact, we see that we see an example where it says that v'sheva did kida, and it's at the end of the after of Chayesora, that Bathsheba bowed in gratitude to David, that he promised that he's going to arrange that Shlomo, her son, is going to be crowned king. So Batikod, and it says, Apayim Oret, with her face to the ground, showing, in other words, that that's what Kidya consists of, with just the face to the ground. Tosfos actually points out, I mean, you have other psukim that mention Hishtachavoya also in connection with the face to the ground. So what it is they had a Kabbalah from their Rebbeim, that that's what it means. Next, Kriya al Birkayim. When it says in the Pasuk that somebody bowed Kriya, then it means they got on their knees. As you have by Shlomo, by the Chanukah Sabayis, he was bowing on his knees. He was kneeling the whole time that he was saying a long tefillah to Hashem, asking Hashem to accept all the tefillahs that people come and daven in the Bis Mikdash, and even after the Churban in the direction of the Bis Mikdash and so forth. So the whole time he was kneeling. So the word kriya means kneeling. Ishtachava is a pishat to die braglaim. And when it says in the pasuk that somebody bowed, ishtachava, it means that he got flat down on the floor with his hands and feet on the ground. Shenema v'harvoy novay ani im chabachach. As we find by Yosef's second dream, where he dreams that the sun and moon and stars are bowing to him, and he comes to Yaakov and tells it over to him and his brothers, and Yaakov rebukes him, and he says, what do you think, that I and your mother and your brothers are all going to come to bow to you to the ground? So the word l'shtachvis l'cha'orza shows that it means that the person's entire body is flat on the ground when they do that. So the Gemara tells, Levi achve kida kameh de Rebbe. Levi one time demonstrated this kida in front of Rebbe, where again, kida basically means that you're bending double and putting only your face to the ground. But then, so now how do you get yourself back up afterwards? So what you do is most of your body weight then has to go Most of your body weight then has to go on your hips to straighten yourself up. You use a little bit. You use the thumbs of your fingers in particular to give yourself a little lift off. But it's a very hard thing to do. So Levi once showed it. Levi one time demonstrated it in front of Rebbe. We find actually in different Gemaras that Rebbe throughout his life was always concerned and worried about the troubles and the cares of the Jewish people. So some of his Talmidim would try at various times to cheer him up. So now this was one of them. Levi tried to do that by demonstrating Kiddah to him for Ipla. But the result of that was that Levi became lame because again he put so much pressure and so much so he tried to put so much strength and pressure on his hips that it damaged them, and from then on he limped. So the Gemara says, "Vahog kagamalei." You're telling me that's what caused him to become lame? Va'amar Rabbi Elazar la'olam ayatiach adam dvarim klapim ayla. Didn't Rabbi Elazar say that there was a different reason for it? That he says a person should never hurl words against Hashem. Meaning, when a person is davening to Hashem, you always have to be careful. On the one hand, you're asking Hashem for such and such. You're complaining to a certain extent. You're complaining to Hashem that he's not doing such and such or whatever. But you always have to be careful not to cross a certain line, which is called hitiach dvarim klapim ayla. So we learned in Tainus, we learned a couple of weeks ago, that Levi did that. There was one time a fast going on for rain. They hadn't had rain, so they had a fast and they were davening. Levi was davening by the Almud over there. He says, as part of his tefillah, he says, Hashem, you're sitting up there in Shemaim and you're not taking care, you're not being concerned about what's going down with your children down here. So that's an example of being matiach dvarim klapim ayla. And sort of a lozer in a later generation warns, be careful not to do that. Because we see that a great person once did that. He once threw words like that against Hashem, the Itla, and he became lame from that. Umanu Levi. And who is Rabbi Elazar talking about? Levi. So we see that that was the cause of it. And the answer is Havahar Garmalai. Both factors contributed. The fact that he was Matiach Dvarim Klapim Ayla meant that therefore the next time that he puts himself in a dangerous situation, where after all we're saying there's a certain danger in Kiddah, because when you try to straighten yourself up, you're putting too much pressure on your hips. So under normal circumstances, he would have been fine with that. We see in Tanakh many times when people do Kiddah, Bas Sheva, and others, and we don't see that they had a problem afterwards. But because Levi had not long before that been Matiach Dvarim Klapim Ayla, so therefore now when he was in a dangerous situation, then Hashem, so to speak, took the opportunity to pay him to pay him back for that. So therefore he ended up becoming lame. Anyway, the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Chiya bar Avin, Chazino lehu la'Abaye v'Rava. I saw Abaye and Rava when they were doing the Nefilas Apayim, the Matzlu Atzluye. They would lean on their sides, not their faces. Now, what's the problem with them leaning? What's the problem with them doing on their faces? So there's two major answers among the Rishonim. Rashi explains that we're continuing with this topic of Einanim Choshev Rashoy Lipol Apanav. That we said that an important person is not supposed to fall on his face, but Sibur, unless he knows that he's going to be answered like Yeshua ben Nun. So Abaya and Rava, according to that. So in other words, according to this, this has nothing to do with the Evan Maskis business. It's just referring back to this last thing about Adam Choshu. So we're saying, in other words, that in terms of the din of Evan Maskis, you're not allowed to do Pishup Yadayim Raglayim in HaTorah. As Tosfos said, maybe Dirabonon, you're not allowed to do anything, you're not allowed to do less than Pishup Yadayim Raglayim. But that's it. The Gemara is not addressing that point over here, says Rashi. It's just a matter of Adam Choshu. On the other hand, Rabbi Haigoin and a number of the Rishonim learn that actually this is a continuation of the Evan Maskis business, and that the Gemara is telling us another factor, another point that you can do in order to get around the problem of bowing down on an Evan Maskis is if you don't actually bow with so we said that Pishat Yadayim Raglayim is no good, and we said, Tosfos said that Dirabanan also not Pishat Yadayim Raglayim, doing like we do Kodim and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur on a stone floor would be also Dirabanan, but if you're Matzlu Atzluye, if you're doing like Abaya and Rava did, where you're just sort of leaning on your side, then it would be Mutter even on a stone floor. So in practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that you have Not yet. If you do not pishat yadayim reglayim and you're matzlo atzluya, you're doing on the side, then you would be allowed to. Then you would be allowed to on any kind of floor. Rabbi Chaim Goin, by the way, has a very interesting point in this truva where they asked him about this gemara. He says, you know, when you think about it, yes, the issur is only on a stone floor. But how do you know that even if you're on a dirt floor, let's say, how do you know that underneath it there aren't old ruins of stone buildings? After all, you commonly find, you dig up under the ground and you find ruins of stone buildings from a few hundred or a few thousand or whatever years ago. So therefore, he says that would be why Abaye and Rava didn't want to rely on that they're not on a stone floor. So before we said in the Gemara that, okay, maybe only part of the shul that Rav was in had a stone floor. We don't know whether Abaye and Rava's shul had a stone floor b'chal, but Rabbi Goin says it doesn't matter. They still would have wanted to be machmir in case there is, in fact, stone underneath the dirt over there or something. Anyway, so again, he learns, and so do a number of other mefoshim, that the matzlu atzluya, that the leaning on their side, is meant in order to avoid the problem of Evan Maskis. So again, the halacha, the accepted halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that as long as you do pishat yadayim reglayim on a stone floor is completely osur d'oraisa, except in the Beis Hamikdash. To do anything less than pishat yadayim reglayim is also d'rabbanan. To do, as we're saying over here, matzlo atzluya, leaning on the sides, you're not doing pishat yadayim reglayim, and your face is not on the ground b'chlal, that you would be allowed to do, even on a stone floor. So the ma'aseh, this is why, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, where we're not doing matz. So again, during the rest of the year, then when we do Nefilas Apayim, we don't even fall on the floor at all, because you have the other consideration about Adam Choshev, that if an Adam Choshev falls on the floor, and then Hashem doesn't, for whatever reason, doesn't answer his tefillah, then again, we said, you know, people are going to think less of him, or people are going to feel worse about themselves. But when it comes to Kodim and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so then, if it's a stone floor, then the only way to do it, the only way to do Kodim, the way that we do it, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, where again, remember, we're not doing Matzlo Atzluya, we don't turn to the side, we actually bow straight down onto the, we're not flat on the ground, but we still have our face to the ground, and as Tosfos is saying, that would be also d'rabbanan on a stone floor. So therefore, you have to put something on the floor instead. And many people have the minhag to put such a thing down, even when it's not a stone floor, the pashtus for the reason that Rabbi Chaim Goin says that there may well be stone underground or something. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, the Yomtov Chamisha b'Yom Kippurim Shishachol. We said on Yomtov you have five aliyahs, on Yom Kippur you have six, and on Shabbos you have seven. So the Gemara says, Masnisin Mani, who is our Mishnah like? Loi Rabbi Shmuel v'loi Rabbi Akiva. It seems to be not like Rabbi Shmuel and not like Rabbi Akiva, who are the two Tanoim where we see in a Braisa that address this. The Tanya, B'yomtov Chamisha or B'yom HaKippurim Shisha over Shabbos Shiva. So the Braisa says that, yes, on Yomtov you have five aliyahs, on Yom Kippur six, on Shabbos seven. But that Braisa continues, Ein person mehen ve'ein mesifin aleihen divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says you cannot have more or less aliyahs than that, which contradicts our Mishnah, because our Mishnah said that you could have more aliyahs at least on Shabbos. And again, we discussed the other day, can you have extra aliyahs on Yom Tov or Yom Kippur as well? But in any case, definitely Shabbos, at least back then, when everybody made their own, when not everybody made their own bracha, you were allowed to add aliyahs. And here, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that. Rabbi Akiva Omer, B'yomtov Chamisha over Yom Kippurim Shiva over Shabbos Shisha. Rabbi Akiva flips around the number of aliyahs on Yom Kippur and on Shabbos. He says Yomtov 5, 7 on Yom Kippur, and 6 on Shabbos, for reasons that we're going to talk about soon. So now, he says, Ein person mehen av mesif and alein. You're not allowed to reduce that number of aliyahs, but you are allowed to add to them. So now, Mani, so now the question is, who does our Mishnah go like? If our Mishnah were to go according to Rabbi Shmuel, can't kasha tesefas? Then you have a problem with the fact Rabbi Shmuel says you're not allowed to add aliyahs, and the Mishnah said you could. And if it went according to Rabbi Akiva says you have six aliyahs on Shabbos and seven on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Shmuel says the other way around. Our Mishnah also says the other way around, so it doesn't work according to Rabbi Akiva either. The answer is Amar Rabba Tanadvei Rabbi Shmuel. The answer is, says Rava, that our Braisa goes according to a third opinion, namely Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, which the Gemara is going to point out, means, in other words, that there's two opinions within what Rabbi Shmuel said. So there's Rabbi Shmuel's own opinion, and then there's the opinion that's embodied in a Braisa from his yeshiva. The Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, because a Braisa of Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel combines the two opinions. On Yom Tov, you have five aliyahs, six on Yom Kippur, seven on Shabbos, and it finishes off. You're not allowed to reduce the number of aliyahs. You're not allowed to have fewer aliyahs than that, but you're allowed to have more. So therefore, our Mishnah goes according to that version. So then the question is, Kasha Rabbi Shmuel, Adi Rabbi Shmuel. Well, then isn't Rabbi Shmuel contradicting himself? And the answer is, Tre Tanoya Libidi Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, what it means is you have two Tanoim who disagree between them what Rabbi Shmuel said. One said that Rabbi Shmuel said you're allowed to add aliyahs, and the other said he said you're not allowed to. Okay. The Gemara says, Man Tana Lahod Tana Rabbanon. Which Tana then is the author of the following, the Tanya? Which Man Tana Lahod Tanya? Then in that case, which of these three opinions is the author of the following, Braisa? Which says, the Yomtiv, on Yomtiv, when it comes to davening, ma'achrin lavoi, people come later to shul than normal, because on Yomtiv you can cook, so therefore Yomtiv, people are busy cooking the Yomtiv meal. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out it's mainly the women who cook the Yomtiv meal, and they're not necessarily the ones coming to shul. But he says, practically speaking, if they're cooking, then they need their husband's help around the house, watching the kids, and maybe sometimes helping with the cooking in order to be able to do that. So therefore, you start davening later on Yom Tov, umemaharin lotzeis, and you end as early as possible in order to give people the time for the simchas Yom Tov, for the soda. V'yemekipurim memaharin lovoi ma'achrin lotzeis. On Yom Kippur, you come as early as possible to shul, because after all, you don't have any food to prepare, so you might as well start davening as soon as possible. And umemaharin lotzeis, and you take a longer time leaving shul, because you have... So that's what we're going to ask. Is it because you have an extra oila, like Rabbi Akiva says, or is there a different reason? Over Shabbos, memarin lava, memarin lotzis. On Shabbos, you should start davening earlier, and you should finish davening, and you should finish davening earlier. So you start earlier again because there's no reason to you can't cook on Shabbos anyhow, so there's no reason to delay delay Shabbos. But again, you should hurry up the davening and leave because of Onik Shabbos. So, Lema Rav Akiva, de Isle Gavi Yosera. Do we have to say that this Braisa is only according to Rav Akiva, who holds that you have an extra oila on Yom Kippur as compared to Shabbos? In other words, again, remember, he says Shabbos you have six aliyahs, Yom Kippur you have seven aliyahs. So on the face of it, that's a reason why on Yom Kippur, therefore, you're going to have the davening is going to take longer. So when our Braisa says that on Yom Kippur, you start early and you finish late, would that be specifically according to Rabbi Akiva? Now, the Rashba brings from Tosfos, it's not in the Tosfos in front of us, so it's a different collection of Tosfos, apparently, that asks, I mean, come on, because of one Ola, it's going to be that much later. I mean, you have a regular Parsha of Shabbos, it's still a lot longer than the Kriya of Yom Kippur. So he says, you're right. The question is not so much about the number of aliyahs. I mean, the Gemara does mention that point, but still the question is more that it puts it in that order, Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos, implying that the number of aliyahs is increasing from Yom Tov to Yom Kippur to Shabbos, whereas according to, or rather, let's focus on what it is in terms of the, in terms of the order of what it describes, of how late you're going to be in shul, with saying that you're going to be much later in shul, Yom Kippur, than you are on Shabbos, that seems to fit better with Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The answer is, afilu teimer Rabbi Shmuel, not necessarily, that braisa could work according to Rabbi Shmuel as well, because with the fact that you stay late in shul on Yom Kippur, nothing to do with the number of aliyahs. There may, in fact, be fewer aliyahs and Yom Kippur than there are on Shabbos, but nafish sedura de yoma. You have a much longer davening. You say the seder ha'avoda, which takes a long time. You have an extra tefillah on Yom Kippur, which you don't on Shabbos. You have ne'ilah. So therefore, for all those reasons, you're going to be staying much later in shul on Yom Kippur than you are on Shabbos, but nothing to do necessarily with the number of aliyahs. Okay. Next, the Gemara says, Hani Shloisha Chamisha Vashiva Kenegad Mi. So we said you have three aliyas on regular days, on Monday and Thursday and Shabbos afternoon, and then you have five on Yom Tov, and you have seven on, we have seven on Shabbos. So what do those three, five, and seven correspond to? Now, Tosfos says, so why don't we're not asking about, what it is like this. Why are we not asking about the four of Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed and the six of Yom Kippur? So later on, we're going to ask about the six of Yom Kippur. So Tosfos says like this. Obviously, a day that has Musaf deserves an extra aliyah. So there's no question that Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed deserve an extra aliyah, and therefore they get four. The question of the Gemara is that, is it so? This that we said in the Mishnah, because Yom Tov is also Asiyas Malacha, therefore you have another Aliyah. Because Yom Kippur is Chayav Kodesh for Malacha, therefore another one. Because Shabbos is Chayav Skila, therefore you have another one. Is that really the reason? Is that really, does that really warrant adding extra Aliyahs just because of that? Just because of the Isser Malacha and how strong that Isser Malacha is? So Gemara is looking for another reason why we have the what those three, five, and seven correspond to. Okay, I mean the Ritva says differently. He says that listen, okay, of course we know the reason is as it said in the Mishnah, but the Gemara wants to find a drasha for it from Sukkim that correspond specifically as to as many as possible of the numbers of aliyas as we have. So, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni and one of the Chachamim who were with him argued, Umanu, and who is that one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Va'amila, or others say the other way around, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, V'chad de'imei, Umanu, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni. So it's the same ones, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni and Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, but the different versions, each man de'omer knew of one of them that had been involved in this debate, didn't know the other one, and left it for others to fill it in. So now we know that it's those two, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni and Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. V'ami lo Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Others say that the other one, that the other half of the debate was not Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni, but Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. Anyway, of those debaters, Chad Amar once said the reason we have three aliyas and five and seven is Keneged Birkas Kohenim, is to correspond to the structure of Birkas Kohenim. The first pasuk of Birkas Kohenim has three words, the second one has five, the third one has seven. So therefore, that's the three, five, and seven. V'chad Omer, the other one says, K'neged Shloisha Shomrei Asaf, it corresponds to the three guards of a gate that you have that are mentioned in a pasuk in connection with one of the kings of Yehuda. Shchamisha Meiroye Pnei Amelach, and you have five of those who see the king's presence, and Shiva Roya Pnei Melech, and the seven who see the face of the king. So now the Shloisha Shomer Asaf and the Chamisha Meiroya Pnei Melech are both mentioned in connection with the king of Yehuda. At the end of Sefer Melachim and at the end of Sefer Yirmiyah, it talks about the Churban. It mentions over there how Nebuzaradan took certain high-ranking people from Yerushalayim and brought them to Nebuchadnezzar to be executed, and it mentions in that connection Shloisha Shomrei Asaf and Chamisha Meiroye Pnei HaMelech. Now, where are the Shiva Roye Pnei HaMelech? Rashi says we're referring to the ones in Megillas Esther. So you have the Shiva Sorei Pnei Paras Umodai, Roye Pnei HaMelech. So of them, you have five particularly, in general then, in a king, so Achshverosh had seven of them. The kings of Yehuda also had seven of them, of whom five were considered more important than the other two. So therefore, so you have a pasuk that mentions three, a pasuk that mentions five, and a pasuk that mentions seven, and therefore corresponding to that, you have the three, five, and seven aliyas. Tosfos says, why are we learning from the seven from the seven ministers of Achashverosh? He was a Rosha, he was a Goy. Why are we modeling Kriyas HaTorah on him and his ministers? So rather, Tosfos says, among the ministers of the king of Yehuda himself, where it says, so you have, in Yirmiyah and in Melachim. So in Melachim, it mentions Chamisha Meiroye Pnei HaMelech. It says that Nebuzaradan captured five of the Roye Pnei HaMelech and brought them to be executed. Then in Yirmiyah, when it tells over the same story, it mentions and said Shiva Meiroye Pnei HaMelech. It says seven of those who see the king's presence. So therefore, so you have different psukim that mention five and seven, both in connection with the kings of Yehuda. Tosfos also explains, based on Yerushalmi, that these are not just ministers of the king, these are actually members of the Sanhedrin. The Pasuk mentions over there, there were 60 people, me'am ha'aretz, from the people of the land. Am ha'aretz didn't mean then, like it meant, like it means in later times, somebody who doesn't know Torah. It meant the people, it meant the important people of the land. So they mentioned 60 of those. You have these three Shomer Asaf, the five or the seven from Roya Pnei Melech, and a couple of others that it lists. So it brings the total up to 70. And Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that the reason why one Pasuk mentions five of them and the other Pasuk mentions seven of them is because one Pasuk is also counting, the Pasuk that mentions the seven is also counting the two Sofrei Adayanim, the two secretaries of the Sanhedrin, whose job is to record all of the discussions and all of the deliberations of the Sanhedrin, so that when they have to vote, they know each one knows what their svara was. So therefore, in any case, so according to Tosfos, the 3, 5, and 7 were all learning from Jewish ministers, not like Rashi says that we're learning the 7 from Achashverosh's Goyish ministers. Anyway, so that's another reason why 3, 5, and 7. So the Gemara says, Omale Abaya. So Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, I skipped a line. Toni Rabbi Yosef. In fact, Rabbi Yosef taught a brisa like that second opinion. Gimel Chamisha V'Shiva corresponds to Shlosha Shomer Asaf Chamisha Meroya Pnei Melech Shiva Roya Pnei Melech. So therefore, like the second opinion, that it corresponds to the way that they have ministers in a human kingdom, particularly in according to Tosfos, in the Jewish kingdom, is the way they set up the number of aliyos. So the Gemara says, Omalei Abaya. So Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, Ad ha'idna my time alei potash lonmar. Rebbe, why didn't you explain that to us until now? Why first now are you teaching us this braisa that gives this reason? Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Loi hava yadayna ditzuchituli. I didn't know that you needed it. I thought you knew the answer already. Have you ever asked me anything and I never told it to you? So in other words, Rabbi Yosef is telling Abaya and his other Talmidim, if you want to know something, ask, because I won't know necessarily whether to volunteer it to you. A very, very powerful thing, by the way, we see from that. We have, for example, similarly in a Gemara in Sanhedrin, where Rebbe Eliezer, before he passes away, is bemoaning the fact that so much knowledge of Torah is going to pass away with him that nobody ever thought to ask him about certain things that he knows, except he says one time Rabbi Akiva asked him about certain things, because the Chachamim are only going to be mashpia only if they know there's a makabel, only if they know that somebody needs to know this. So therefore, if not, then they don't have anybody to be mashpia to. So now Rabbi Yosef is saying the same thing. If you want to know something, ask. Don't, otherwise I'm going to assume that you already know it and I don't need to tell it to you. Onward, the Gemara says, Amale Yaakov Mina L'Rabbi Yehuda. Yaakov Mina asked Rabbi Yehuda. Now, on the face of it, Mina means the min. So the question is, are we going to say that we're going to quote a min by name? What happened to Shem Rishoyim Yaakov? So Tosfos says, the correct girsa should not be Mina, but rather Matzah, which would mean he's named after a name of the place that he came from. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, actually, maybe that's not necessary. There is actually a place in Tanakh called Mini. Maybe it means that this Yaakov came from this place called Mini. Whatever the case, anyway, so he asked, so Omale Yaakov Mina L'Rabbi Yehuda, so he asked Rabbi Yehuda, Hani Shisha Diyem HaKippurim K'neged Mi. We said, so far, that takes care of 3, 5, and 7 aliyahs. 4 aliyahs, okay, like Tosfos said, the fact that you have Musaf on Rosh Chodesh and Chalamoyed is a reason to add an extra aliyah. So we don't necessarily need a remez and a pasuk to that 4. But why Dafka 6? Why 6 on Yom Kippur? Why Dafka that number? Amalai, so he answers him, Keneged Shisha Sha'omdu Mi Mina Shel Ezra V'Shisha Mismoylai. It corresponds to in Nehemiah, it describes how at one point they gathered all the Jewish people together at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash to Yerushalayim, and Ezra read to them from the Sefer Torah. And there were 6 connected Shisha Sha'omdu Mimina Shel Ezra. It corresponds to the 6 people who stood on the right side of Ezra when he was leaning, Vishisha Mismoila, and another 6 were standing on his left. So correspond. Now that kriya took place actually on Rosh Hashanah, but still Rosh Hashanah itself is a regular Yom Tov. So if we have 5 Olim, so instead we use that for Yom Kippur. We use 6. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Vayamid Ezra Asofer on Migdal Eitz Asher Also LaDaver." Ezra Asofer stood on a wooden platform that they had built for this purpose. Vayamid Etzla, and next to him, And his right side was Matisya, the Shema, the Anoya, the Uriya, the Chilkia, or Maaseya, Al Yaminai. All those six were standing on his right side, or Mismaila, and on his left side were standing Pedoya, or Mishoel, or Malkia, the Choshum, the Chashbadona, Zacharia, Mesholam. So he says, one second, Anishiva Habu. What do you mean? It seems on the left side there were seven people. The answer is Hainu Zacharia, Hainu Mesholam. The answer is Zacharia and Mesholam are two names for the same person. In fact, you see that, Maharsha says, because it doesn't say Zacharia u'Meshulam, it says Zacharia Meshulam, implying in other words that Meshulam was a title for Zacharia. V'amai, kore Meshulam, so why is he called also Meshulam? D'mishlam ba'ovde, because he was perfect in his deeds. He was a great tzaddik, he was perfect in everything he did, therefore he's distinguished with the nickname Meshulam. Maybe this is Zacharia the Navi, maybe this is a different Zacharia, I don't think it says one way or the other, whatever the case. So therefore it comes out that there were six people on Ezra's right and six on his left, and corresponding to that is why we have the six Aliyahs of Yom Kippur. Okay. Now let's talk about some more dinim of Kriyas HaTorah. Tana Rabbanan, HaKol Olam L'Minyan Shiva. Anybody who gets an Aliyah can count toward the seven, at Vafilu Kotan, Vafilu Isha, even a child or even a woman. Aval Omru Chachamim, however, the Chachamim said, Isha le tikra b'Torah mepnei kvod sibur. A woman should not be reading from the Torah. A woman should not be getting an aliyah because of the kavod of the tzibur. It's not the kavod dik that's like as if they don't have men who are able to get aliyahs and they have to have her. Now, when we say over here that even a katan, so there are a few caveats that the Rishonim put on that. First of all, you can't have the katan, can't be the Baal Kore. Because the Baal Kodeh is the one who's actually being motzi to people, and therefore he can't do that. So the most it could be is that a katan would be able to get one of the aliyahs. It also says then that you can't have all the olim biktanim. You have to have at least that a majority of them are gdolim, and then you can have like one katan in there. There are also, when we say over here, Olam L'Minyan Shiva, does it mean Davka 7 on Shabbos? Would you be able to call up a katan on one of the other days, on Monday or Thursday, or Rosh Chodesh or Yom Tov or what have you? That you have also a difference of opinion among the poskim, whether that would be allowed or not. When we say Shiva, do we mean Davka 7 of Shabbos or not? L'maisa in Shulchan Aruch, it says, even though in principle, was saying over here that you could call up a katan. In practice, the minhag in most places is that you call up a katan only for maftir. So there are shuls where they do that. There are shuls where they often call up a katan for maftir. I was once in such a shul when I was 11, a youth minion, and they gave me maftir, for example. But most of the time you don't even see that. Most of the time they wait till the kid is bar mitzvah. But to have Uli Ralias, I've seen a reference that in Yemenite shuls they do that. They call up a cotton. They often call up a cotton for shishi. But in most other kahilas, if they're going to give a cotton an aliyah, it's only going to be maftir, not one of the actual seven. As far as an isha over here, also now first of all, we're saying because of kavod atzibur, not there is also a point that some of the mafoshim point out, which is that. Again, we said in the Mishnah that in the earlier times, only the first Ola and the last one made a bracha. The people in the middle didn't. So maybe then, therefore, so at that time, maybe a woman could, in principle, get an aliyah. The problem would be kavod atzibur, but fine. What if the tzibur is mochel on their kavod, let's say. But maybe nowadays that every Ola makes brachas, well, a woman is not chayev in learning Torah. She doesn't have the same chiyuv of learning Torah as men do. So for her to say a bracha might actually be a bracha levatola. So that's another reason brought why we don't give women aliyahs. Now we have a question. Maftir Maushi Yalo Laminyan Shiva. Does the Maftir count as one of the seven aliyahs? In other words, on Shabbos, let's say. So you're supposed to have seven aliyahs. So is the Maftir the seventh aliyah, or do we add an extra aliyah, or do we have to add an extra aliyah for him? Do we say that he doesn't count as one of the seven? So Rav Huna and Rav Yumi Ba'aba. So Rav Huna and Rav Yumi Ba'aba argue on that point. Chad Oma Oyla v'chad Oma Eina Oyla. One says that the Maftir does count as one of the seven, or however, not just seven, but again, the same, whatever number of aliyahs that you have to have on that day. V'chadoma eina ola, and the other one says he does not count. Manda oma ola, the one who says that he does count as one of the number of aliyahs, d'hakari, the fact is he is reading from the Torah, why shouldn't he count? Or manda oma eina ola, the one who says he doesn't count, says kida ola. The reason why he says that the Maftir doesn't count is based on what ola says. Why does the one who says the Haftorah, why does he first have to read Psukim from the Torah? Why don't we just have him start straight out with the Haftorah? Mipnei kvod Torah. The reason is because of the kavod of the Torah. You don't want people to think that Nevi'im is on an equal level with Torah, that you're saying the same way, the exact same way as we just called up people to read from the Torah, and they're making brachas on it, the same way we're calling up this guy to read from Nevi'im, and he's making brachas on it, so people are going to think that Nevi'im and Torah are on an equal level. So in order to avoid that, we have to first have him read Psukim from the Torah. So therefore, so that opinion that says that the Maftir doesn't count as one of the regular number of Olim, so he says, well, since the only reason we're calling him to read Psukim from the Torah is for the covered of the Torah rather than in order to be motzi the people, l'minyana lo solik, so therefore you can't count towards the number of aliyahs. Now, Tosfos points out like this. Now there are Rishonim who learn that the halacha is flat out, that he's not Ola, and therefore that you always have to have an extra one. Tosfos points out, actually, that... Tosfos points out, on the one hand, yes, the halacha technically, Tosfos says the halacha is technically that he is Ola. So yeah, again, you have Rishonim who learn that the halacha is that he's not Ola, which is why you have the little note over here of Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah that refers to Rambam and so forth that say that. Tosfos says, no, actually the halacha is that the Maftir is Ola. So what we do is like this then. On days when we can't add Aliyas, namely on Tainis Tzibur, And on days when we have a fixed number of aliyahs and we have a haftarah, namely on a tainis tzibur and on Yom Kippur afternoon, we're not allowed to add aliyahs at those times. So then of necessity, we have the maftu be the third aliyah. So we learned this yesterday. We said that on Tisha B'Av, for example, we said you have three olim and one of them is the maftir. That's why. Why don't we do three olim plus the maftir? The reason is because technically the halacha is that the third one does in fact count as one of the olim. The maftir does count as one of the olim. And therefore, if we were to do three regular olim plus a maftir, then we'd be adding extra, and we're not allowed to add extra, as the Mishnah says. On the other hand, Tosfos says, Shabbos and Yom Tov and Yom Kippur Shacharis, where you are in principle allowed to add aliyahs, as we talked the other day, that you're allowed to add aliyahs, according to most poskim, you're allowed to add aliyahs on Shabbos, and according to some poskim, even on Yom Tov and on Yom Kippur. So then, we might as well have the maftir be an extra aliyah, and that way we're satisfying all the opinions. That way, whether we say that the maftir counts as one of the necessary aliyahs or not, that way we've covered our bases, and we have, for example, on Yom Tov, we're going to have five regular aliyahs, then we're going to have the maftir, even if the halacha was like the opinion that the maftir doesn't count as one of the five, nevertheless, that's fine. You still had five regular aliyahs. So that's what we do. So that's the reason for the difference why it is that on Tainas Tzibur, on Yom Kippur afternoon, the third Oila is the Maftir, whereas on Yom Tov and Shabbos and Yom Kippur, it's not. That's the reason for that distinction is based on what Tosfos is saying over here. Okay, the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. If you're telling me that the Maftir is there only, is reading Psukim only for covered Torah, So, but a Brisa says, "Hamafter b'Navi lo yifches me'estru be'echad psukim." When a person is saying haftorah from Nevi'im, he should not say less than 21 psukim. Kineged shiva shakoru b'Torah, which corresponds to the seven people who read from the Torah, since the seven olim, each of them needed at least three psukim, then 7 times 3 is 21. So therefore, the haftorah should be at least 21 psukim in length. Now, Ve'im Issa, if you're telling me that the Maftir counts as one of the seven, okay, so then good, you had seven aliyahs of three psukim each, equals a minimum of 21. But if you're telling me the Maftir doesn't count as one of the seven, so in other words, on Shabbos, you need an eighth aliyah for Maftir, then Esrim Abba Havim, then you have 24 psukim, because you have three psukim for each of eight oilim. Tosfos points out that the implication of this Gemara is a very interesting point. Nowadays, how do we do with Maftir on a regular Shabbos? Is the Maftir, the Shvi reads until the end of the parasha, then the Maftir reads the last few psukim of the parasha, and then if it's one of those days when you have an extra Sefer Torah, then the Maftir reads from that one. Tosfos points out that actually from this Gemara, it seems that the minhag in the time of the Gemara was that the master would actually read psukim that had not been read for an ola before him. In other words, the original minhag was that Shri would end a few psukim before the end of the parasha, and then the master would take, and then the master would be called up, and they'd read those last few psukim for him. Now, what changed? In the times of the Rabbanan Sivaroi, they made a takana that you say Kaddish after the regular number of aliyahs are finished, before Maftir, in order to demonstrate that the Maftir does not count as one of the number of the aliyahs. In other words, apparently the Rabbanan Sivaroi decided there was a problem that people are going to think mistakenly that you have to have six regular aliyahs on Yom Tov, or seven on Yom Kippur, or eight on Shabbos, and therefore they created this concept of saying Chatzi Kaddish between them. Once you do that, then the maftir definitely does not count as one of the kruim, then it's definitely considered extra. So now, in that case, they had to also change. Now they can't have any more that the maftir is going to be reading psukim that haven't been read before, because at this point, it's a new thing. The Kaddish has broken things up. Therefore, they changed the minhag and made it that the maftir nowadays reads only, rereads a few psukim from the end of the parasha, which is how we have it nowadays. Tosfos also goes on to discuss, so what about now, what happens on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, or where we read the parasha of Rosh Chodesh, or on a Yom Tov when we read the Psukim of the Musafim or whatever. So Tosfos discusses the possibilities. Do we say again that Shvi should be reading those Psukim and then Maftir is going to be repeating them? Or do we do that in that case Maftir reads those? So, and in that case, the Maftir is reading something new that hasn't been read before. So Tosfos brings a minhag that Rabbeinu Meshulam said that even in that case, you should do the first way that you're always going to be having the Maftir is repeating, but Lamaisa, we don't do that. Lamaisa, we do, as Tosfos says, was the older minhag in France, that on such days, the Maftir does in fact read something new, the Parasha of Rosh Chodesh, or the Musaf of the, or the Musaf of the day, or whatever. Tosfos, by the way, also points out an interesting side point. The same way as we take out a Sefer Torah and read the parasha of the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh on Rosh Chodesh, on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, we take out an extra Sefer Torah for that, and on Yom Tov we take out an extra Sefer Torah and we read the Musaf of that day. Why don't we do that every Shabbos? Every Shabbos there was a Korban Musaf. Why don't we take out a second Sefer Torah every Shabbos and read the parasha of Yom HaShabbos? Tosfos gives a few reasons. One is because it's only two Psukim. Another reason is because, and then two psukim is not enough for an aliyah anyway, and there's no sense adding more psukim before or after it, because anyway, if you're trying to focus on in Yonish or Yom, then that anyway, whatever you would read of psukim before and after it is not really relevant to that. Second of all, Tosfos says that Torah usually reflects the theme of the parasha that you just read, or when you have multiple Sifrei Torah taken out, then the theme of the last one that you read from. For example, on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, you read the parasha of Rosh Chodesh from the second one, and the Haftorah is the Haftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. And the same thing with the other ones. So now, if you were to read over Yom HaShabbos every Shabbos, then every Shabbos you'd have to have the same Haftorah. Some Haftorah that would be having to do with Shabbos, and the Chacham didn't want to do that. Also, Tosfos says you really only need to do that with Karbonos that are there for Kapara. The Karbonos of Shabbos are not really there so much for Kapara, so therefore you don't need to. So anyway, so getting back to the Gemara, the question again was that if the Maftir doesn't count as one of the seven aliyahs, if you need an eighth aliyah for Maftir, and again, this is before that Rabbanan Sivaroi made this takana of saying Kaddish, then it comes out, each of the seven olam is reading three psukim. The Maftir is also reading three new psukim, so you have at least 24. Why don't we say that Torah has to be at least 24 psukim? And the answer is kivin nimishum kvod Torah, who, since the only reason we said why the master needs to read psukim from Torah at all is only because of the covet of the Torah, so that people don't mistakenly think that Torah and Nevi'im are on an equal level, well, kinegda nami leboi, so you don't need to have extra psukim to correspond to him. So it's enough that you have 21 psukim in that Torah. Now, so we're saying that Haftorah has to be 21 psukim at least, but maskif lo Rava. Rava says, what do you mean? I can find you examples now. Bahare eliseichem sfu. Consider the Haftorah that begins Kodem Hashem tzvokas eliseichem sfu al zivcheichem from Sefer Yirmiyah. It's the Haftorah of Parshas Tzav. Deloy havin esrim v'chad. You don't have 21 psukim in it. Recorded it, and yet we read it as Haftorah. So the Velt reads for that Haftorah 19 psukim. They read 17 psukim back to back over there, beginning from Eliseichem Sfu until the end of that perek, and then a few psukim from the new perek. And then they since that ends on a sad note, then they skip another perek ahead and do two more psukim. So they have a total of 19 psukim. Our minhag is that actually we break off the first section after only 8 psukim, and then we read the 2 psukim at the end, etc. So therefore, we only have 10 psukim in that haftarah. But anyway, either way, 19 or 10 is still less than 21. Somebody once pointed out a bit of an ironic thing. This is haftarah of Parshat Tzav. In the Velt, they have the minhag. Now, our minhag is Shabbos HaGadol. You read the special haftarah of Shabbos HaGadol. Our minhag is only when Shabbos HaGadol is Erev Pesach. The Velt reads that haftarah. The Velt reads that after every Shabbos HaGadol. Regular years, Shabbos HaGadol is always Parshas Tzav. So it comes out, this is one of the only Haftarahs mentioned actually explicitly mentioned in the Gemara, and in the Velt, they push it off so often, almost every year, they push it off in favor of the Haftarah of Shabbos HaGadol, a little ironic. Anyway, so the question is, again, that Haftarah is only 19 psukim according to the Velt Hashiminag, 10 psukim according to Minag Chabad. Either way, it's not 21 psukim. And we still read it as Haftarah. And the answer is Shiny Hossam to Salik in Yana. The difference is over there because the topic is ended in less than 21 psukim. So you're allowed to read when we say that a Haftarah has to be 21 psukim if the topic takes less than 21 psukim and it's a complete topic in itself, then you're allowed to lay in it as Haftarah. The Gemara says, the loy Salik in Yana loy. So you're telling me that where the Haftarah doesn't end at the end of a topic, then you're not allowed to do Haftarah less than 21 psukim. Rav Shmuel Ba'aba says many times I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav Yechanan. When we read 10 psukim, when I read 10 psukim from Haftarah, Omalon Afsiku, then he would tell me that's enough, you can stop there. And B'pashtus, that wasn't the end of a topic, otherwise Rav Shmuel Ba'aba wouldn't have thought to continue anyway. The answer is Mokam Shiesh Turgamon Shaini. The difference is that there was a Turgamon, there was somebody who was going and translating, giving the Aramaic translation, Pasuk by Pasuk, or after every few Psukim, and therefore to have more than 10 Psukim for the Haftarah would be a Tircha for the Tzibur. Tosfos points out, by the way, now we're going to learn later on in our Perek, we're going to learn in the Mishnah at the bottom of this Amud, that there's the concept of translating the Torah, but we see from this Gemara over here that it's not an absolutely required thing to have a Meturgamon standing there and translating. They used to do that in the times of the Gemara, because the people spoke Aramaic, they didn't know Lashon Kodesh, and therefore they would translate for them in order that they should be able to understand. But Tosfos says the fact that it's saying over here, where there's a Meturgamon, implies it's not necessarily required to have one. So what it was is in the times of the Gemara and in the times of the Gaonim, they still did that. They used to translate Pasuk by Pasuk, or in the case of Nevi'im, we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that you can translate after every few Pasukim. So they would do that. In later times, as Jews moved into other countries and they stopped speaking Aramaic, then in most places they stopped doing the Targum, Pasuk by Pasuk. Tosfos mentions on the following Amud, on Chavdalad Amud Aleph, that in their times they still had a minhag to do the Targum on certain Yom Tovim, on the first day Pesach, and on the Haftarah, the first day Pesach, and the Haftarah, the first day Shavuos, they used to do the Targum. But by their times, they didn't do the Targum on the Chumash anymore, and in later times they stopped even that minhag. The Taimanim still have that minhag. They still do the Targum Pasuk by the Torah. There's actually also Rav Sadia Namaforshim talk about, by the way, why don't we just translate the Torah into a different language? And the answer is because only the Targum in Aramaic, Targum Unkelus for Torah, Targum Yonis and Menozil for Nevi'im, were done with Ruach HaKodesh. And Bechlal, Aramaic itself is a special language. It has a certain degree of Kedusha almost comparable to Lashon Kodesh. We see that there are even Psukim and Tanakh that are written in Aramaic. So therefore, it has a special status and they can be translating the Torah in it in public, but not translations into other languages. That those other languages don't have the same degree of Kedusha, and therefore neither do translations in it. With that said, Rav Sadia Gaon, about 1,000 years ago, translated the Torah into Arabic, and there are some Yemenite Kehillos that use his translation, Pasuk by Pasuk, after the Psukim, instead of or in addition to Targum Onkelos. Anyway, the point is, when you have a Meturgamon, and therefore you have 10 psukim for that Torah, so you think about it, the Meturgamon is repeating every pasuk in Aramaic, so that makes the 10 psukim then in effect are now 20 psukim, and at the end, when you finish off saying the last pasuk again in Lashon Kodesh, in order to show that the Targum is more important than Lashon Kodesh, so there's your 21. So Mokam Shesh Turgamon Shiny. So the Gemara says, where there's a Meturgamon, it's different. The Tonid of Tachlifa Bashmur, Loish Shanu Elav Mokam Shein Turgamon. All of this that we're saying that you have to have a Haftorah of 21 Sukkim only applies where there's no Turgamon. Ava Mokam Shesh Turgamon Posek. But when there's a Meturgamon, then you can have even fewer Sukkim than that. And therefore, we many times have Haftorahs that are shorter than 21 Sukkim. So the bottom line is, in other words, so you have to have, it has to be Solik in Yana. You have to be that a Haftorah finishes a topic, and then you can end it even if, so Haftorah can be 21 psukim, and then if it's 21 or more, then it can end even in the middle of a topic. If it's less than 21, then it has to end at the end of a topic, but that's fine. It can be less than 21. We have, for example, the Haftorah of Achrim, is Halach of Nechushim, is only 9 psukim, and that's fine because it's the end of the Navi Amos, so it's Solik in Yana, and that's good enough for Haftorah. And you have other examples of that, of short Haftorah. You have other examples like that of short Haftorahs. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.